At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
That's just how my dad was. He was... Sorry.
No.
He was always the first one to rush in to help. No matter what it was. I told my wife just a few weeks ago, it really sucks that you don't recognize that you're living with heroes until they're gone. And my dad was one of those people.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts. We are joined by Jason Haskell. We are so excited. You all have just listened to an episode of a couple who were in the Cokeville Miracle, not in the movie, in the actual event. And Jason knows very well so much about the Cokeville Miracle and what happened there. It's kind of hard knowing what happened to call that a miracle. The miracle part is everything that happened to help protect and save all of those individuals that were there. Jason is the son of Rich Haskell. And unfortunately, Rich is no longer with us. So we have the next best thing, and Jason here with us to talk about his dad, to tell us about his dad and his role in the whole thing. Jason, what was his actual title? I know he was the bomb investigator, but is there like, what he would be called?
So at the time that it happened, he was a deputy sheriff and he was the county bomb technician for, in Wyoming. And he actually covered three different counties, Sweetwater County, Sublette and Lincoln counties.
Okay. Awesome. And it's kind of funny every time, obviously when I think of events with the Cokeville Miracle, the image of the movie is in my head, right? All the time. And I remember specifically in there that the lead investigator, so not the bomb investigator, but the lead investigator had mentioned something in the movie that it was kind of a miracle that there wasn't a ton of law enforcement that was super close in proximity at the time. And that was the case for your dad, right? He had to travel from where he was to be able to get there. And I'm going to quit talking. I'm going to turn it over to you. I'd love for you just to kind of walk through that, from your dad's perspective, just kind of everything. And I'd just love to hear your experience in just kind of how everything unfolded.
So I was introduced or found out that it was happening. My dad and I just happened to be in the same Wyoming National Guard unit together, and we were getting ready to fly off to eastern Wyoming for a weekend training. And I'm sitting on the back of a plane, and we're all there, and I'm looking around, and I don't see my dad. And so I asked my first sergeant, who was also in the sheriff's office, where my dad was, or because we were getting ready to leave. And he said, oh, he got called to a situation over in Cokeville. And so that was all I knew. And so I spent the weekend out in training and got home and then kind of started talking to my dad, and he started relating to me what had happened. He got the call that there was a bomb / hostage situation at the school, the elementary school there in Cokeville, which was about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from where we lived. And when he got the call, he actually had to get a ride home from Cokeville because he burned out his engine driving so fast in his car. He got there in about 53 minutes. It was just all out to get there. And that's just how my dad was. He was, sorry.
No.
He was always the first one to rush in to help, no matter what it was. I told my wife just a few weeks ago, it really sucks that you don't recognize that you're living with heroes until they're gone. And my dad was one of those people. But yeah, he was the first to be there to help anybody in a situation.
So normal travel, how long should that trip have taken?
Somewhere between an hour and a half and 2 hours. Yeah, and he did it in about 53 minutes.
Wow. Do you remember, like, what, obviously, I hope that all of our listeners have watched the movie by now, but do you, in his investigation and in all of his research and stuff in looking at the bomb, it didn't perform the way that it was designed to perform. Can you walk us through kind of some of his findings and things that he maybe had discussed with you guys kind of in a non-investigative role, if you will?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way the bomb was designed, it was for a maximum blast to go out horizontally into a room. And there were milk jugs filled with gasoline for the fireball effect, and then fertilizer, which was a catalyst on with that, and then some other explosives. And so, you know, in a room, like a classroom that it was in, it was designed to just devastate everything in that room, fire, concussion, and everything else. It didn't do that for what experts would call an unexplained reason. The force of the blast went straight up into the ceiling, and it didn't go out into the room. It filled the room with smoke, but it didn't do what it was supposed to do.
Did he ever say why he thought that it went up and not out?
Yeah, there were, and you know, the movie should be called The Cokeville Miracles, because there were a string of miracles that happened, or you can call them whatever you want, unexplained circumstances. I'll choose miracles that occurred. One, the gas that was in the milk jugs ate through the plastic and was slowly dripping onto the fertilizer and soaked it. If people that know understand explosives and different things, liquid gasoline doesn't burn. It's the fumes, the vapors that burn. And so the soaked fertilizer didn't ignite. One of the other things that happened was inexplicably, one of the wires on one of the blasting caps was cut. There's nothing to explain why that wire was cut, but it cut the power of the explosion in half, having one of the blasting caps not detonate. And then the third thing was that witnesses, and I'm sure you've spoken to a few of them, testified to a group of people standing around the cart the explosives and forming a protective circle that basically just forced the blast straight up. We don't know who those people were. They were never found in the room. They didn't exit the building, but they were there.
There are no words with stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it, yeah, those are the kinds of truths that I know to be true. I know that there are times that we have unseen help and protection. And in that instance, some eyes were able to see.
Yeah.
Those, which is, I love reading and hearing about all of those stories. But of course, in a court of law or however it might be, we, you know, your dad could never write down that that's one of the reasons why the explosion didn't work the way that it was supposed to. But those are just little things, little seeds that point to divinity. And I'm so thankful for that and for those stories and those testimonies. And you mentioned the wire that was cut. It was, I don't want people to think that it just separated from where it was supposed to be. It was actually cut.
Yeah, it wasn't pulled out. It wasn't disconnected. It was cut. It was a clean, my dad said it had a clean cut that should not have been there unless somebody went in with a pair of wire cutters and snipped that wire.
Yep, so another unexplained miracle. Somehow that happened. And I even think the gasoline leaking the way that it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about an individual who planned out everything. And there is no way that he was going to go in there with a faulty jug that was leaking. So, in my eyes, whoever it was that cut it with those wire cutters just gave a little stab to the, you know,
right?
The jug also. And yeah, just amazing. I mean, there are more miracles than we have time to talk about with all.
There really are. There are so many. I mean, you know, the gas leaking, creating the fumes, you know, causing headaches and things, and then him telling the people, open the windows, that allowed a lot of that concussion to vent out the open windows as well, reducing damage. So there's, you can go through the report and it's like, you know, it is coincidence, miracle, right? So
was there anything that was not said in the movie that you know about that would have been another miracle?
Trying to think. My dad was pretty, when the movie people reached out to him, he's like, I'm going to tell you things that you're not going to believe, but they're real. And if you don't include them, you're cheapening this story. And I really wouldn't be interested in participating. And so, no, he was pretty adamant that, you know, the story be told the way it happened.
That's awesome. He was so adamant with that.
I would like for you to take a second and talk a little bit more about your dad. And I'm really sorry. But just, I want people to know who he was and is, and that he was an angel to so many people in providing the service that he did.
He really was. I mean, he was the second of six boys. He grew up in Salt Lake and, you know, in the 40s and 50s. But he lived his life just, he didn't know how to sit still. He was always doing something, and it was usually for somebody else. You know, he's joined the Marine Corps when he was 19 and spent years there, and then got into law enforcement in Utah, moved to Wyoming, got out of law enforcement, then got back into it, and got back into the military in Wyoming. And so he was very patriotic. He loved his country. He was very, honestly, I mean, his whole life wasn't focused on God in his younger years. But when I was about 8 or 9 years old, we started going back to church regularly. And, you know, he was just the kind of guy that once he'd made that decision was made. And he didn't have to keep going back to revisit the decision. And so, you know, we grew up going to church on Sundays. And he was always the first to volunteer or, you know, take us kids out to help other people. You know, he had 9 kids, 7 boys and 2 girls, and we were always out doing things for others. And he was just that kind of guy, like I said, that was, you know, if there was something that needed to be done, he was on the front lines to volunteer to help other people. And, you know, in the community, he, in addition to being a cop, you know, he was involved in youth sports. He was a coach. He was a referee. He was just always involved in the community and always wanted to give back to his country and to the people that were closest to him.
Thank goodness. Well, thank God for men like Rich Haskell. We, you know, we're surrounded by people like that who constantly put everyone else ahead of themselves. And, you know, that's something that I can be better at and strive to be more like your dad.
And so many people don't know all the great things that he did because he was probably so humble about it.
Yeah. He just, you're exactly right. He didn't seek for accolades or thanks or anything. He just did it because he knew it was the right thing to do. And he just loved to help other people. And, you know, his growing up in a small town, small town Wyoming, a population of, depending on the year, anywhere from 15 to 18,000 people, it's easy to be a big fish in a small pond. But we would go to California and run into people that knew Rich Haskell. We'd go, you know, my mom was from the East Coast, and we'd go back east and run into people who knew Rich Haskell. And it was just because of he lived a life of service, and it made an impact across the country.
That's so cool.
Yep, that is so awesome. Jason, really quick, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. You know, people might watch something like the Cokeville Miracle, or they hear about miracles, all of these supernatural things, or when God maybe intervenes and saves some people, but it seems at times he doesn't save others in other circumstances. When people say stuff like that, well, why did your God save such and such, but didn't save my loved one or something? What are some thoughts that maybe come to mind and how you can answer that?
You know, that's a topic that actually comes up quite a bit. And my first thought, I go back to the scriptures where it says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. And it's my belief that God has a plan for all of us. And in that plan, at the forefront, he respects individual agency. And a lot of times the hardships that we have are brought on by ourselves and our own choices. Not always. Sometimes they're choices of other people or things that are out of our control. But above it all, I have no doubt that God loves each and every one of us individually and personally. And, you know, the challenges that one person might be going through might seem like the weight of the world to them. And to someone else, it's, man, I wish I had that problem, right? And it's just that attitude has helped me to carry a more eternal perspective that I may have hardships in this life, but I know that if I am true and faithful to the commandments that God has given us through the scriptures, that he has promised me that I will experience happiness Now, whether that's in this life or the next, I will experience it. And if my, you know, my responsibility is to remain true and faithful. He's never he didn't promise me a life of without challenges or without even hurt. But I would experience happiness at some point. And so that's really the perspective that I try to keep. I don't know if that, you know, helps answer the question, but that's kind of how I look at things like that.
To be honest, there is no real right answer to that question, because there are some things that we just don't know. And like you said, our ways are not his ways. And unfortunately, that's kind of what we're left with in this life, right? Someday we'll get those answers, I believe.
But I love that you said respect. He respects our agency. I've never thought of it in that way. Like, he respects us enough to allow us to make those choices. Whether he likes it or not, he's going to respect us in that, because when we've talked about this on the podcast before, like, a lot of people look at God in like this stern way, but we like to think of him as a loving God. He is a loving God, and a loving God would allow, you know, for that to happen, that respect to happen. And thank you for sharing that, because I've never looked at it in that way.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's a perspective that I've come to realize as my own kids have gotten older. And my wife and I constantly say parenting adult kids is harder than parenting toddlers, because you can't just say, yeah, I'm sorry. You can't just, you know, when you lay down the law and your toddlers say, well, why? Because I said so. I'm the mom, I'm the dad, and I said so. That doesn't work with adult kids, because I said so. Well, I choose not to come back anymore. And that's not what I want. I want my kids to be around me. And so I have to respect their agency, even though the decisions I see them making sometimes through my own experience, I know isn't going to bring them happiness. It's going to cause them troubles. But it's like, I love you, so I'm going to let you go through this by yourself. I'm here to help you if ever you want it. But, my responsibility is to love you on your journey, not to love you on the journey I think you should be on.
And why, how could we think of God in any other way than what you just put it? Like, as a parent, you know, God's, he made us like in his image. And it's the more that we've talked about it, the more I come to that knowledge of like, we are made in his image. He is our father. He does act like us, you know, in a sense, or we act like him. You know, we want the best for our children. We want them to come back to, you know, the goodness and hold to that iron rod and do the things that they should be doing. But like you said, I mean, yeah, it's hard when they don't want to do the things that, you know, we want them to do.
Yeah.
We have to pray and hope that they come back.
And it, you know, you're talking about going back to my dad, now that he's on the other side of the veil, I have no doubt that he's continuing the same type of work that he was doing while he was here. Just the first to step forward to what needs to be done and how can I help? And, sorry. The other day I was pushing one of my granddaughters in a swing in the backyard, and I was pushing her really high, and she said, Grandpa, I'm about to touch heaven. I'm going so high. And I said, yes, you are, sweetie. And she said, Grandpa, when are you going to heaven? And I said, I don't know. Hopefully not soon, because I want to meet your little sister when she gets here. And I started thinking, I was like, my dad's getting her ready. And, you know, I find a lot of comfort in knowing that my dad's not here, but he's not gone, and that he can still be an angel in my life and talk to my grandkids as they're getting ready to come and join our family and watch over my family as we travel. I know for a fact that he still sends those tender mercies to my mom. He loved her with all of his heart. And every now and then something will happen, and my mom will say, your dad's looking out for me. He helped me through this today. He left me a little something just to remind me. that he's not here, but he's not gone.
Thank you for sharing that. There was so much truth in all of what you just shared with us, but I still have to ask you
Sure.
our final question.
Yeah, sure.
I'd love for you to share one thing that you know to be true.
I know for a fact, without any doubt, that God lives and that we are his children and that he loves every one of us individually and personally in a way that we can't comprehend all the time, but it's real, and that he wants for us to come home to him one day. I know that without a doubt.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. Jason, thank you so much for sitting with us. Thank you for introducing me to your dad and for helping me to get to know him. I'm so grateful for him, that he was a hero to so many people and that he helped uncover some incredible truths on that day. Thank you again.
Thank you for telling his story. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We are honored. And I don't know if I told you this before, but the Cokeville miracle, that whole thing was at the very top of my list on things that I wanted to cover when starting this podcast. So thank you for being a part of that.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'm grateful that it's a part of my life.
All right. Go look for those angels.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.